This is Mr. William Hogan. Mr. Hogan, could you tell us when you moved to Westboro?
I would say 1918.
And where did you live?
43 Summer Street.
You mentioned that your family lived here before that, however.
Yes, my grandfather and so forth, and my aunts were 22 Cedar Street.
I would like to talk to you about some of the work in Westboro. Could you tell us about the fire station and the firemen? You mentioned your father was the first fireman.
First permanent fireman. That was the reason that we came back to Westboro from Marlboro. He had a chauffeur's license, and they had a new Brockway truck with a chain drive on the rear. And they needed someone that could drive the truck and so forth. And in those days, it was 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. So that eventually we moved from Summer Street to 2 Grove Street, which was right across from the fire station, so that he'd be closer to the station.
The fire alarm, what was the fire alarm?
Well, fire alarm was somewhat like it is today. Today's boxes were there then, but the bell would ring in the station, and the whistles were blown at the hat shop, which was on Phillip Street. A steam whistle that somebody on duty would blow whatever alarm came in.
There would be a particular signal for the bells, and numbers.
Mm-hmm.
They are now.
It's still the same. 43 is still the fire station, and 45 was in the square.
Was there only one fireman at that time?
One permanent fireman.
And volunteers?
The rest was volunteer. Although at night, there used to be as many as 6 would sleep there. Most of them were unmarried men. It gave them a room, really, and they used to work days, and they'd sleep there nights. They had only one truck then. They still had the steam pumper, and they had a horse-drawn, which was horse-drawn, and a horse-drawn hook and ladder, which the horses would come up from Boland's Barn on Brigham Street.
They were trained not to be afraid of fire, obviously.
I guess so. I don't know.
Can you tell us anything about some of the big fires you remember in Westboro?
Well, I think the biggest one was where the Bay State is now.
On Eastman.
We were living on Summer Street at the time, and it was shortly before my father became a fireman. The sparks that night only flew as far as the Lyman School, and I can remember my father being up on the roof of the house with a pail of water to knock down the sparks that were landing all over the place. It pretty well burned out the whole area there. There was, I don't remember how many factories, but there were quite a few hat shops, and I think there was a shoe shop in there, too.
Along East Main Street?
East Main and the street that goes down to the Bay State by Dacey's Diner there. They were down and back. There was a Bartlett Lumber Company was down there, too, but it seems to me that was there after the fire because I don't remember that burning up.
Do you remember the Whitney House burning?
Just vaguely on that. That was a real rainy night. And at that time, they thought, it was never proved, they thought they had a firebug in town. And
this was on West Main Street.
Where the school is there now, next to the cemetery.
And it was a big hotel.
Yeah, hotel. It was stable. Well, I remember more the stables out back burning. Along in the same time that St. Luke's Church burned and 2 or 3 other places.
Was that the same fire?
No, it was different times, but in that period, because my father was out on night patrols driving around because they had suspicions that somebody was setting them. That particular fire, I remember the alarm went off at home, that is the alarm clock, 3 o'clock in the morning to call him. He was going to go out on patrol. And we were having a violent rainstorm, a thunderstorm. He said there'd never be a fire, and he didn't go out. And about 2 hours later, the stables went up in flame.
Oh, my goodness.
For the anything. Even if he had gone, they probably would have been.
About what time was this? What year?
Oh.
Just in general.
Years ahead. It maybe. The 20s? 23, somewhere along there. 24, maybe.
Now, another fire was on Milk Street, is that right?
Well, yeah, but that was quite a few years after, I would say. Oh, in the 30s, probably, where the VIAC is now. There were two big wooden factories, five or six stories tall. The Westboro Underwear was in one, and the hat shop was in the one behind it. And that particular shop, the underwear, was all wooden beams and wooden pegs. It was a real old one. So that when it started to burn, it just went.
That must have been something. Could you tell us about your mother's working? You mentioned she was working
well,
in
the
underwear.
Well, she worked the underwear as a presser. And
what kinds of underwear, I wanted to ask you.
Oh, you're trying to put me on the spot. It was all ladies' underwear, but you probably wouldn't be able to buy them today. Everything had to be pressed and boxed and bundled.
This was bloomers, you mentioned.
Bloomers, right.
The long gowns.
And long nightgowns and the long sleeves. Mother Hubbards, they call them.
And quite a few women in Westboro did work in these factories.
Oh, yes. Yeah. The underwear had, they did all their own cutting, their own patterns. And, Dick Hunter's father was the foreman of that, Jim Hunter, on the top floor, or the second floor. And then the stitching was at the other end of the factory. And then they'd come downstairs, which was the storeroom and the pressing department and the shipping department. And
you worked somewhere there? Did
I
you
worked say? In the shipping department there, yeah.
You mentioned a shoe factory in which saddle Oxfords were made.
Well, this is when I was in the post office, so it would have to be in the 1940s, probably, 1950. Rasmussen Shoe.
Which was where?
Which was in two floors of the underwear building. As I said, it was either a five or a six-story factory.
On Milk Street.
And the underwear on Milk Street. The underwear only took two floors. I know there was kind of a machine shop in the basement. And before the shoe company came in, there was a trunk and bag. They used to make trunks and suitcases and so forth there. But the prime shoe that they made there was that Saddle Oxford women's shoe. And they shipped them all over the country, through the post office.
You thought he might have been an originator, one of the originators?
He, I think, was one of the originators of that Saddle Oxford, and they did really well with it.
You mentioned the telephone exchange. How was it different, and where was it?
Well, that was upstairs in the Guarantee Bank building, about where Dick Wood has his office now. It was all manual operator. There were no dial systems, and if you wanted the operator, you picked up the receiver and rang the crank or cranked the bell, and the operator would plug in and ask what number, and you'd give her the number and she'd ring it for you. But one time they had, I think, four operators working days there, and then, of course, somebody at night. When the dials came in, most of those girls were transferred to, you know, other exchanges, because they still have some operators. But
did these operators know most of the people in town?
Oh, or? Yeah, most of the people and most of the numbers. You could always tell when the fire alarm, or when there was a fire call, because the phone in my home and the phone in the fire station were connected. And the operator would always ring it fast and four or five times. You could tell the way that they rang it, that it was an emergency call.
I wondered about Lake Chauncey. This is getting to a little bit to entertainment, but when you dance the light, fantastic. What was Lake Chauncey? What was the setup, and what were the types of dances and music there?
Well, at that time, it was strictly a summer setup, open-air pavilion.
This would be the 20s and the 30s?
Yes, late 20s, 30s. There was a large dance floor, with a roof on it, of course. It wasn't open air. Like Balalaya up in Shrewsbury was just out in the open with no roof on it. And then...
What was check dancing?
Check dancing, well, whatever you could afford. It was a nickel a dance, and you'd buy a strip of checks. And you didn't go to the dance with anybody. The girls went down separately, and the fellas went down separately, and you'd go around and ask somebody for a dance. And, in those days, the trolley cars used to run right by there, too. So from the square, they'd go down, and just beyond the hospital gate, mm-hmm. they'd turn over towards Marlborough down that way. So you could take a trolley car down or ride down.
How did they clear the floor, then, if you only bought, let's say, one check or ticket?
Well, at the end of the dance, why everybody got off the floor, there was somebody at each door that would take your tickets as you came through. That was a nickel for a couple, not a nickel for an individual.
That's a bargain.
Then in between it, they, at the other end, they had a large bowling alley, Candlepin. I think there were either 8 or 10 alleys, and that was separated by a wooden pavilion where they had a refreshment stand and so forth. And farther down where the present beach is now, there used to be a lot of bathhouses and lockers. So forth. It was quite a...
It was a big resort.
Oh, it was a big place. A lot of people used to come from Boston in the summer. You could take the Boston and Worcester trolley out of Boston. And those were high-speed air cars. And they stopped at Lyman Street, or the station was where... Well, the last one I knew was Gorin's that lived in there. And then Frank Gribble's house, they went right up back of Gannon's garage up through there, so that they'd come out there and get off and then take the local trolley down to the back.
Were there boats also to rent?
Yes, canoes. There was a boathouse there, and they had rowboats and canoes that you could rent and so forth. Yeah.
Do you remember theater at all?
At Chauncey? Mm-hmm. Not really, although there was one there, but I don't know as it ever did much.
Downtown, or... I was told there once was a band concert. Do you remember?
Where the Rotary is now.
Where the Rotary is now.
Before that, Rotary was put in. And I don't remember what year it was put in. Some of the old pictures would show it. The trolley cars used to come right into the square. You could take a trolley from here to Northborough and then change and go to Marlborough. Or you could take one direct to Marlborough. Mm-hmm. And they went to Hopkins and Framingham and out West Main Street into Worcester.
Good service.
I don't remember, but they tell way back there was a bar room on Brigham Street, and Worcester went dry one year. Mm-hmm. And the trolleys to Worcester did a terrific business coming back and forth to Westboro.
Was there an actual bandstand at the Rotary?
Oh,
is
yes.
Is that what you're saying there was?
Well, it wasn't. It was one that they'd put up. It was kind of a temporary arrangement. But they had quite a nice band, too.
Who would play in this band, or was it a community band?
Yes. Yeah, it was a Westboro band that some of the old people, like Bill Miller's father and Allie Ashley and some of the older people, they had a regular Westboro community band.
And they play in the summer
yeah,
evenings?
They play in the summer, yeah. They, I'm trying to think, they'd put a string of lights around it there, of course, and the people used to pack their cars all along the street, much like they do for the Memorial Day Parade. They'd get down early and pack their car. And before they put that circle in, it seemed as though there was much more area there than there is now. There weren't as many cars either.
And people of all ages could enjoy this concert
yes,
there
yeah,
and
yeah.
stroll down. You mentioned you played at Lake Chauncey once.
Oh, when I was just after I got out of high school, and last year I was in high school, we had a small band, and then they enlarged it a little bit, and they played a few twice at Chauncey, and we played over the Pines in Sudbury. I didn't go into that too much, but some of the other fellows continued on and did pretty well with it.
Westboro then encouraged musicians in that way. Do you remember Prohibition in Westboro at all?
Not really, no.
Not really.
No. I can remember some of it.
Probably glad
well, it was right after I got out of high school. Of course, it was still on, and there used to be places that you could get a pitcher of beer or anything else that you wanted, really, but they didn't let the young fellows in too much.
Well, that's a good idea. You said vaguely you remembered armistice from World War I.
Mm.
What type of thing do you remember?
I just remember that the square being full of people. I was living on Summer Street at the time, and naturally went down, and I think I was with my uncle. And I can remember them hanging the Kaiser from the flagpole down there in effigy. It was just a madhouse, that's all. And a lot of confusion.
A lot of celebrating.
Yelling, and celebrating, right.
You were postmaster for a very long time in Westboro. Could you tell us?
Not postmaster, no.
No.
I was assistant for 17 years.
For 17 years.
And then I was postmaster from late 65 until I retired, 73.
Good long time. Could you tell us about the post office, where it was, and when you began in the post office?
I started in September of 38, 16th, and the 21st of that week was the 1938 hurricane that did so much damage in town. At that time, the post office was where the Hickox building is now. Then we moved from there to the Summer Street location, 27 Summer. And we moved from there to the present location on East Main Street.
When was that?
65, went down East Main Street. It was in the fall. And
mm-hmm.
I can give you the exact dates if
that's
you want
right.
me to
no,
look them
that's
up.
That's all right. What do you remember about the hurricane?
Just the damage that it did, the big old trees that it knocked over. Streets like Cross Street, and I still have some pictures around of it. Seems though every tree was just laid right over into the street. We were in the post office, and of course there were no customers coming in, but we watched the Baptist Church steeple just go right out into the main street. It just blew right over. But I think more damage to the trees than anything, because Westboro did have some beautiful old trees.
After that storm.
They were sadly depleted now.
You mentioned your salary and pension when you went in 1938. Could you talk about that?
Well, one of the reasons I got interested in the post office, at that time it was about the only place that had a pension. When I started there, after 4 years as a regular, the top salary was $42 a week, which was pretty good money. And the pension, no matter how long you worked or how much you made, was $100 a month. But I've been out 4 years now. And in that time, my pension's been increased over 45% because of the cost of living escalator clause that's there.
What was the post office like, or how was it different than it is today? The service and the hours?
Well, the big difference was longer hours. And I think the town was smaller and you had more personalized service. We used to know just about everybody by their first name and middle initial. And then the fact that we were on the railroad, where they had the RPO or railway mail cars, gave excellent service. In fact, I have now an envelope upstairs that was mailed in Westboro, we'll say at 11 o'clock in the morning, postmarked. Received in Framingham at 1:30 and delivered at 2 o'clock. It was a special delivery, but of course it's all backstabbed. Well, that used to go on the noon train, old train 6,
mm-hmm.
and the clerks would sort it right on the train, and they'd come right off in Framingham and go to the post office, and they'd take it out and deliver it.
So there was a mail train?
Oh, yes. Yeah. There were, I'd say at least 10 mail trains a day that stopped here. And then there were three express trains that didn't stop, that they would throw a pouch, and we would hang one and they'd catch it.
This was at the station?
Yes, right here.
Existing now.
The old railroad station there, right.
When would you'd put a sack of mail about ready to go out of town toward Boston or mm-hmm. Worcester, whichever, and hang it on this post?
They'd have the arms that they would hang the pouch on, and they would catch it as they came by with a big arm that came out of the train. And there were three of those that I remember. There might have been four. I know there were two going west and one going east, but...
And then these others had actual clerks on the train themselves.
Oh, yes, yeah. We used to have to learn a distribution scheme, and they would come out from Boston, from the Railway Mail headquarters, and you'd have to qualify on that scheme. So that when we sorted mail, we would sort it to the different railway post offices and bypass a lot of the post offices. Now, they just go into a big center somewhere, and it's all dumped there, and they work it from there.
Mostly done by trucks, also.
It's all truck. Well, Boston, New York still carries some or something like that, but all the smaller towns, it's all truck now. So.
And railway probably was a great deal more efficient in a way, at least faster.
That's right. You could get mail into New York City the next morning with no problem at all. So. But when the trains went, all that went too.
All the service went too. Right. How much did stamps cost when you first started?
See, it was 2 cents for local delivery and 3 cents if it went out of town. And there was a distinction. If you were mailing a letter in Westboro to be delivered in Westboro, it was 2 cents. Postcards were a penny.
Mm-hmm. Penny postals were a penny.
That's right. Especially if it was a dime. So that changed fast after...
It's escalating.
Oh, I think it went to 3 cents, and then, of course, it went to 4 and 5, and it kept going up, so...
Probably keeps going. You mentioned there was no Social Security at that time, is that right?
That was one of the reasons I got interested in the post office, but... Because right after I took the exam in 1936, but there wasn't any appointment until 38. There wasn't any vacancy. And I had also taken the exam for the Railway Mail Service, too. Mm. But this one came up first, so, and I was first on the list, so I took that one. But Social Security didn't start until 1938.
How many postmen... Were there in the post office about the same, or there are a lot more
in those days, they used to deliver the parcel post with a three-wheel hand-pushed cart. And in the wintertime, you pull a sled with a big box on it to deliver parcels all over town. There were three regular letter carriers, and they delivered twice a day to the houses. And one who did the collections and the parcel post and the special deliveries and so forth. And I think there were three regular clerks, a postmaster and an assistant postmaster, and one substitute clerk, which is what I started as. When I left, there were 5 or 6 trucks, and there were 24 or 25 people working in the office here, so that it had
grown
quite a bit.
Yes. Right. Did you rotate jobs, for instance? Was there only one man delivering special delivery, or did you rotate various jobs?
No.
You stayed?
The first special deliveries, they used to have a high school boy. He'd come in the morning before he went to school and take the specials out on his bicycle, and then he'd come back at noontime, and then he'd come back after school. And again at 6 o'clock at night when the last mail train came in, and they'd deliver the special by bicycle. Mm-hmm. Of course, there was one RFD route, and that emanated in Southborough. And he'd deliver from Southborough up, and then he'd stop and rack the mail for Westborough and take off and deliver it. And when I left, there were 3 RFD routes in Westborough alone. So that gives you some idea of how the town has grown. So.
There was an RFD route to Grafton, on the Grafton area, or Upton. People living on Upton Road, for instance, or...
It was delivered out of Westboro.
It was?
Hmm.
Okay.
But the carrier came from Southboro.
I see.
They combined Southboro and Westboro.
So they did all in one.
It grew so much that they split that. SoPro got their own route, and we had one, and then it went to two, and then it went to three.
Mr. Hogan, I wondered if you could tell us a little about the Depression in Westboro and how it affected this community.
Well, I graduated from high school in 1930 in Westboro. I went to Burdett Business School in Boston on the trains. And at the time, I was working in the Westboro newsroom mornings at 5 o'clock and then catch the train, and then I'd go back and work nights 6 to 9 and do my studying behind the cash register and so forth.
Was the newsroom also on Westboro?
The newsroom is about where the Guaranty Bank is now.
And it's, was that just selling paper?
It's across the street now, but Chamberlain owned it. It was Chamberlain's newsroom at that time. So when I left business school, I got a job with it was Luce Wiles Biscuit Company in Worcester, which is now Sunshine Biscuit. And in addition to taking accounting and so forth, I had taken shorthand and typewriting too. So that in those days, they didn't have any girls in the office. It was all men. And that's how I got the job, because I could do shorthand and so forth. But I was there about maybe a month. I started at $14 a week. And they had a 5% pay cut because of the Depression, so I ended up getting $13.20. But it was a job anyway. And I stayed with them, well, I was 32 until I went in the post office in 38, but I moved up to assistant cashier and then cashier, and then I went out on the road as a salesman.
Do you remember people without jobs around
town? Oh, yes, in town. Well, right where Star Robbins Tailor Shop is there was an empty store next door. No, it's where he is now, because he used to be down in the Bay State building. And they used to hand out whatever they had for free food, like cabbage or sugar or anything they had. And there were lines of people there waiting to...
Bread lines.
Well, I wouldn't say they were bread lines, but they were getting supplements.
Who ran this? Was it a...
It was a government-sponsored thing. I don't remember how it was, but it's much the same as... You see some of the pictures in New York of the handouts for the food. It was surplus food.
Mm-hmm.
And potatoes, anything that they happen to have a surplus of, they'd hand it out. And I don't think they needed coupons or anything like they do now, like food stamps and so forth.
Were there men selling things on the street, for instance?
In Worcester, apples and so forth, because... With Sunshine Biscuit, when I was a salesman, at the time they closed all the banks, there was one in Worcester, the Bancroft Trust, that a lot of people lost everything they had in it. It was before they had the bank insurance. And we couldn't take collecting for the company. We couldn't take any checks. It all had to be strictly cash for a while until the banks got going again and so forth. Now you have... What, $40,000 insurance on your accounts and so forth?
Protected.
Which is a good thing, really.
It must have been a black day indeed when...
But I, from the time I left business school, in fact, from the time I was in high school, I've never known what it is not to have a week's pay. Some weeks it was small, but I've never been out of work, never loafed.
That's lucky. Loafed. That's very lucky.
Because I was willing to work, too. So.
Yeah. Was there any newspaper printed in town?
Well, the Chronotype.
Where was that printed? And
well, it's upstairs over where the pub is now on Milk Street. Art Leland, his father, really is the one that founded it. And then Art ran it for years after that. A former postmaster, Bill Temple, was the editor of it for quite a long time. And the last... editor that I was friendly with was Kurt McLaughlin, that went to the Telegram and Gazette.
Mm-hmm.
He recently died. I don't know if you ever knew him or not, but...
This was a weekly. It stayed...
Weekly paper, yeah.
A weekly paper and local news.
Would you like to see some of them?
Yes, I would sometime.
Sure. I have some of the summer.
Okay. Mr. Hogan, could you tell us a little bit about the orchards and the strawberry fields in Westboro?
As opposed to nurse's strawberry fields today.
Yes, the different ones.
Orchards, probably the biggest one were Gilmore's, which is now where the Quick Farms are.
On Adams Street.
On Adams Street. And then Baldwin Farms on Moss Street. And I don't think that they even do anything up there now. And Carl Henry had a good-sized orchard on Fisher Street, where Gary Circle and all those houses are in there. And then on Chestnut Street, across from my house, were Emery's orchards. And also they raised a lot of strawberries there, which we used to pick for them as kids. For 3 cents a box, I might as well put that in there too.
That's right. How were you paid? You went
3 cents a box.
You brought the box up.
Boxes up and you get paid for them. They weren't full enough. You had to pick a few more and put them in there. But
you mentioned a farm where the high school is now on West Main Street.
Well, originally that was the, or as far as I remember, the Whitney Estate. And at the time that I used to work there with some of my pals weeding, Morrill Brothers ran it. They were vegetable gardeners. They planted all kinds of vegetables. And the rows would run from about West Main Street to down where the ski toe area is, and you'd get 50 cents for weeding the row. Sometimes it took 2 days to do it. But then after that, Aronson bought it, and they were mostly cattle. They didn't farm it as much. No, they didn't do so much dairy, but they bought and sold cattle. They'd come in on the freight cars down back of the Bay State there, and they'd come up to the farm, and then they'd sell them out to different farmers and so forth.
It was a big estate at one time, I know.
Yes, yeah.
Beautiful big home. Are there dairy farms that you remember in Westboro?
Not real big ones. When I lived on Summer Street, we used to get our milk at the end of the street from Ward. And that was before they had to have it pasteurized and so forth. You'd go down, and they used to keep the milk in the well to keep it cool, and just get a quart or two and bring it home.
This was a store?
No, it was a little... Well, you really wouldn't call it a farm. It was a small farm. They had a few cows, and they sold milk to the neighbors and so forth. I think Fay probably had the biggest dairy operation. They used to deliver house to house and so forth.
On Nurse
East
Street?
No, they were on East Main Street. There were some that had a lot of milk, but they sold it in bulk.
There was a milk train, is that right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they would
Four or something in the morning, and that's, they put it in the big milk tins and took it to the train and shipped it into the cities. But as far as selling it locally, not too many of them did that.
Mm-hmm. Again, the trains are important.
They were, right.
Mainstream
right.
Industry here. What was the population of Westboro when you were growing up? Do you remember? Or when?
About 3,500. Of course, in the official population, they used to include the State Hospital and the Lyman School. And at one time, the inmate population there ran better than 2,000 people. So that if you looked at the population figures, it seemed bigger than the town itself mm-hmm. really was.
Did you have much to do with Lyman School? And
not a great deal, no.
We wondered what the reaction of the town was, the townspeople, to Lyman School. Do you have any particular opinions for or against it?
No, I don't remember too. I do remember that, because they had like military training there, they... every parade, Memorial Day, and so forth, they'd have companies, all the boys would have uniforms, and they'd march to the town, and they'd be in the parade. And they used to put on a drill with the wooden rifles. And then they'd march back to the school. Of course, in those days, just as you go over the Milk Street Bridge, there was a siding there, and all the coal for the Lyman School was dumped there. And the boys used to come down and shovel it into the horse-drawn wagons, and they'd take it back to the school and so on. They really worked them then. They had a big dairy and a big farm. And,
was this used?
Whether it was good or bad, I don't know, but
it was
they did have discipline.
In a way, they use their own milk and their own produce for the school.
Yeah, yeah. Of course, the hospital did that. They had a big dairy farm, big pig farm, raised an awful lot of their produce and everything down there.
With the patients working it?
Oh, yes. Yeah. It was good for some of the
good
patients.
Good, healthy work.
That's right. It gave them something to do. And, a lot of them weren't really that bad. They did need some care and so forth, but they used to work the dairies. They used to work out in the piggery. Then they closed all that up. I think they still have a greenhouse there now. I don't know whether they still use it or not. They had some beautiful plants there. They use them for all the wards and decorate and everything.
Okay.